For Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, this is the Tank Slappers Podcast. I'm Lewis Duncan, and as always, I'm joined by Oriol Puigdemont. And on this week's show, we're going to be discussing a very dramatic Portuguese Grand Prix. Yuri, you're just back from Portimão, and really, we have to start with, first of all, how are you? Second of all, we have to start with Marc Marquez and Francesco Bagnaia, the big talking point from that Grand Prix. I mean, it took two rounds for there to be a big incident between Marquez and another Ducati rider.
Yes, hello. First things first, I'm happy and tired. But yeah, I think the second round of the championship was eventful. I would say that, as you mentioned, the incident between Marquez and Bagnaia shares the focus with Acosta's performance, which was completely amazing, and I think this guy will bring us a lot of excitement during this year, because everybody says that in MotoGP is super difficult to overtake. But not for him, apparently. So yeah, super, super happy to have this guy, performing the way he does. Regarding the incident with Mark and Pecco, well, we knew that this was gonna happen sooner or later, but probably nobody expected to be that sooner, that soon. Now it's time for Ducati to manage the situation, not only for Ducati, but I mean, in terms of the incident itself, I would say that it was a racing incident. End of story. Mark was, I would say, more explicit, more aggressive on blaming Pecco than opposite. But yeah, I think now it's time for them to calm down, and I don't know, probably Ducati will have something to say about the whole situation, because as you probably know, Mark mentioned the telemetry, so yeah. I think it was again a racing incident, but it anticipates what we probably gonna have during the year.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of what Ducati was warned about last year, when the idea that Mark might go to Gresini first came up. And as we know, Ducati didn't want Mark kind of anywhere near its bikes. Gigi Deligna said as much on the day that Mark rode the bike for the first time at Valencia. He told Spanish media that, you know, for sure we didn't want Mark. Now he's here, we're interested to see what he can do. And obviously after Qatar, Gigi was very complimentary, and his debrief on Ducati's website, you know, Mark's a great champion, blah blah blah, all the rest of it. But you know, this, like you say, this was going to happen sooner or later. And I think the responses between the two riders is very interesting. Pecco was very, I got the impression Pecco was holding back. You know, Pecco was being very diplomatic, very political, very, you know, accepted it was a racing incident. Mark was Mark about it. Mark doesn't say things just, you know, because he's angry, because it's heat of the moment. Mark knew exactly what he wanted to say. And you spoke about the telemetry, and I thought that was a very, very interesting comment.
I mean, from my perspective, from my point of view, first of all, Mark wouldn't be on a Ducati, wouldn't be racing on a Ducati bike if Ducati didn't want him to be in a Ducati bike. That's first point. I mean, what they say that no, because we cannot interfere in Gresini, that's not true. I mean, if Mark is racing with a Ducati prototype is because somebody from the very top management of Ducati gave the green light.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, another story is that what they say on public because they want to keep the, I don't know, but that's for sure. And given the pride that and the egos that we have inside the Ducati management, it's not very difficult to to imagine who was pushing or on the side that wanted Mark to ride for Ducati. That's the first point. Everybody warned Ducati about let's say the difficulties of managing not Mark, but the influence that Mark would have in a really in a very controlled environment.
Mm.
Now we have the first example of this, and I think it's gonna be there's gonna be more of those.
Yeah.
So it's up to them. I think it's gonna be a really big challenge for the management. And again, the outcome of all of this, in my opinion, it will depend on how superior Ducati is gonna be during the championship.
Mm.
Because if the title is between any or a few of Ducati riders, it will be much easier to manage than if KTM is involved, Aprilia is involved, or I think I would say Aprilia or KTM.
Mm.
So it will probably have a big it would mean a big change of the scenario if that happens.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I mean, what's interesting about this is that Mark's kind of comments were very strong, and it sort of left Pecco in a position where he can't really answer back to them for 3 weeks until we get to Austin, really. That's going into Austin, where we very much expect Mark to maybe take that next step forward on a track that we know he's very strong at. It creates a little bit of, I imagine, a bit of unease for Ducati going into that one, because the last thing they really want at round three is for Mark and Pecco to kind of get at each other and, potentially start taking points away from each other. You know, when we see the likes of the KTM being quick, when the Aprilia, being fast as well, I wouldn't say an unnecessary situation, but like you say, if they don't get a handle on it quickly, it could quickly spiral.
Yeah, there's another funny thing about what happened in Portimao after the race, that Ducati wanted Pecco to speak first, to attend the media before Mark, because they wanted Pecco to be relaxed. Otherwise, Pecco would have had the chance to reply.
Mm.
So Mark was the first one and was the one blaming Pecco. But Pecco didn't have the chance to hit back.
Mm.
Now we have 3 weeks with no racing, no chance for an argument.
Mm.
But I think it was intentional from Ducati's side.
That's interesting. I mean, you can see why. You can see the logic in that. Pecco was just, not scored any points, and kind of Martin's taken a fairly decent lead in the championship after that race. But this will be a real test of Pecco's kind of maturity, is how he responds to this. If he gets too kind of wrapped up in it, then he can. This will be a kind of an interesting sort of challenge in terms of his defense of his title.
Yes, but I think Pecco is mature enough to handle these kind of situations. I mean, he's had that in the past with Martin. Okay, Martin is not market, that's for sure. But I don't think it will have a huge influence on him. Pecco, in my opinion, has learned that, and he keeps saying that he speaks on track. And I think that's mainly what he's been doing for his whole career. And I think that's what he's always tried to calm down and to be super, super balanced in his comments.
Yeah. Kind of moving away from the incident before that point, Pecco's race wasn't brilliant, and it came after he made quite a big mistake in the sprint race, in quite a dominant position. So, you know, even before that, you know, the incident with Mark, this was kind of an uncharacteristically kind of weaker weekend for Pecco with, you know, a track that he was very dominant at last year, and I think we all kind of expected him to maybe be more of a favourite than maybe Martin, especially in the Grand Prix, but it didn't really turn out to be the case.
Yeah, but I think, again, another year and the level has been raised. So now everybody is super close. It's even closer than last year. And Martin is on fire. Martin is on fire. So at least he was on fire on Sunday because he had a perfect race. He didn't have to, he managed the times a bit, but he did pretty much what Pecco did in Qatar. So he put himself on the lead since turn one, and then he control everything. So I think we will have a lot of that in that race. Let's see next rounds. But I think that making this, I mean, Pecco's mistake on the sprint race was not a huge one. It was not a crash. But when the things are so, when the field is so tight, you pay the mistake. But I think it's still super early to take any conclusions. I think that there will be races where Pecco will be faster, and I mean, on Sunday he was struggling, but he would have finished probably fifth, sixth place, which is not as good as he normally does, but not a disaster. The problem is that it ended up with a crash.
Yeah, you have to say Martin's kind of performance in that Grand Prix is maybe arguably the best we've seen from Jorge. It was a really mature ride. He had a game plan in mind to get into the front, you know, by turn three and really lock down that lead and then just manage things. And what I found interesting was after the race, he said he remembered from Indonesia that, you know, you don't have to be 3, 4, 5 seconds up the road to win a Grand Prix. You just have to be, you know, there. You just have to have enough in hand to beat your rivals. And it's I think we've just seen another big step there from Jorge.
Yeah, I think from the mental side, he's worked a lot, and now it's fun because he says that his probably weak point is on Saturday again. Last year, he was super focused on trying to get this consistency on Sunday, and then he focused back on trying to get back that pure speed, that explosivity. Now it's the same. He's super focused on Sunday, and then step by step, he will probably be more concentrated on trying to get that, yeah, that pure speed that is been always characteristic on him.
Yeah, 100%. I think this GP24 is kind of produced, you know, a couple of issues that they've not seen before, mainly this sort of rear chatter problem. But yeah. Jorge seems to think that they've kind of figured out why it happens. He said at the weekend that it's when they push quite hard from the beginning is when the problem's there. So yeah, the fact they've, you know, they still need to do a bit of work there, but the fact he's already kind of figured out how best to manage a race now with that problem, you know, it's, you know, in theory, it's, you know, he'll just only be getting stronger. The problems that he had in Qatar, for example, shouldn't really be an issue kind of going forward. And, you know, I think Jorge at the moment, I know it's very early, but he does kind of seem to me as maybe the danger man in this championship. If there's one rider that could maybe break away early on, it could possibly be him.
Yeah, especially because he's in a position where he's doesn't have, I mean, he has nothing to lose. I mean, he has no contract for next year. He knows that he's not going to be in Pramac next year. So,
yeah,
the door is full open for him to try to make the most. And in my opinion, I mean, he has reached his peak in terms of performance in MotoGP. And again, he has nothing to lose. I mean, he whether he stays on Yamaha and on Ducati, on the official team, or I know that Honda would love to sign him. Mm-hmm. Also, Yamaha would be super happy to sign him. So, I mean, all the manufacturers called him last year, mm-hmm. and they will do it again. I mean, I know that Honda looks at him with super, super, super big eyes and trying to convince him to join the project. It's mm-hmm. not gonna be easy, and I think it's on Ducati's hands. But again, I think that he has nothing to lose. Whether he is able to challenge and to be a title contender, which I think that he will be, it will probably put himself in the better position for that second Ducati factory seat.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially because now at the moment he looks a bit more, a bit faster and a bit more solid than Enea.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Enea had a good weekend in Portugal, but you know, couldn't capitalize on that pole position, and it does definitely seem like Enea is under kind of the more pressure there. You know, if Ducati.
There are a few factors that play in against Enea for renewing his contract with the factory Ducati. Don't forget that on first place, I mean, despite what many people think, for Ducati having two Italian riders is not ideal. In terms of marketing, in terms of, I mean, of course, why they sign Enea? Because the numbers. Because 2 years ago he was more competitive than Martin, despite they were competing with different bikes. Don't forget that, with different specs. But I would say, don't get me wrong, but I would say that Ducati was a bit forced to put Enea on that bike, despite I know that the first option was to put Martin, Then the results make them change their mind. So that's one factor. Now we have this factor, and then we have the results. We have the standings. So I think that Enea's chances are smaller after every race.
No, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, we know obviously that kind of if Martin had won the championship last year, then he would have been on the factory bike this year. But and yes, Enea had his injury problems last year, but he needed to take a bit more of a step forward at the start of this season, and it just hasn't been there. And you know, with like you say, Martin in such a high demand. Excuse me, such a high demand. Why, if you're Ducati, why would you persevere with hoping that Enea kind of works out? You know, you put him on a satellite bike and you'll be fine. You know, it's
let's see how the next 3-4 races maximum evolve. Mm-hmm. But if this is the field that we're gonna have, the things that have happened in the first two races, I wouldn't understand any other move than putting Martin on that second factory bike.
Yeah, 100%. One rider that's probably destined to be on a factory bike sooner rather than later is Pedro Acosta. I know it seems like every podcast we speak about two riders, but they are the two riders that are really stealing the headlines. And Pedro, again, you know, I don't like using the word unbelievable, because it's not unbelievable. This is a generational talent. He's doing what we expect him to do as this great, fast, young rider. But like you said at the start of the show, Yuri, the way that this kid overtakes on the bike and the way that he... I had this thought in my head when I was watching the coverage this weekend, and the way Pedro rides his bike, the way he moves about the bike, the way he just, you know, really manhandles it. It's like when you watch one of those, there just seems to be a difference between a really great rider and the way that they ride a bike and a good rider. And the way he rides a bike is almost the same way that people like, you know, Mark rides a bike, or, you know, Lorenzo used to ride the bike, or Stoner. You know, those guys are just so special that they can just, they look like they're dancing with their machine. That's Pedro. He looks so at ease on a MotoGP bike.
Yeah. I would say that Pedro is in a factory bike already.
Yeah.
But decorated in red. It's not a factory KTM, but he has exactly the same. Because, I mean, KTM works in that way that if you perform, they compensate it. So, first this, and then I agree with you 100% that when now we see Pedro, at least when I see Pedro, when I watch Pedro riding, it reminds me the first year of Mark, when he was, I would say, in this control wildness.
Mm-hmm.
Was in control of, you know, on
yeah,
uncontrolled, I don't know how to describe that.
Controlled chaos.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've seen that. We've seen that in an when he was trying to overtake Pecco, and mm-hmm. with both tires sliding on the curve, in leaning. So again, everybody says that with these kind of bikes, it's almost impossible to overtake. Patapam, he starts seventh, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
he was eighth position in the third lap, and then he ends up on the podium, overtaking Miller, Binder, Pecco, Marquez. So it means that you can overtake. At least Pedro can overtake. So it's a blessing to be this guy, to have this guy in this year. And the thing is, where's his limit? I don't really, because, I mean, he's still learning and he has a lot of margin of improvement. So let's see what he brings us.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's very much a learning process for Pedro, and the podium was a little bit fortunate, you know, with Maverick's gearbox issue, but the racecraft is there, and you know, the fact that he was so far ahead of the two factory team KTM riders is really, you know, that I think that's really the big story, rather than the podium, is the fact he was just so much better than Brad Binder and Jack Miller.
Yeah, we've seen that and we've heard that after the race when we spoke with Jack and Brad, and they couldn't do anything else than say that Pedro is riding the bike in an incredible way, that he's doing things that they can only wish at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, what else they can say? I mean, it's other than say... Chapeau.
Yeah. Lastly, I just want to speak about Maverick, because it was a much needed kind of sort of return to form for Maverick, and you know, obviously he got that sprint win, which was his first kind of win of any kind since he was on a Yamaha at the start of 2021. It was unfortunate the way the Grand Prix ended for Maverick, but it does, you know, after kind of a fairly difficult winter, it does sort of seem like Maverick, the real Maverick, the Maverick that Aprilia, you know, had faith in, is there. I hope.
I wouldn't rush up into conclusions with him, especially because don't forget that last year in Portimao, he was P2.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is it's a good track for him. This is a fair point to make.
So it's super good to have the best Maverick back, but we need to wait to reconfirm that this version is not going to be a, how do you call it, one-hit wonders?
Yeah, yeah.
So
flash in the pan.
Exactly. So, I need to see the same Maverick, I mean, in Austin. We need to see that he's... I mean, I'm not asking for him to be on fighting for the podium in every race.
Yeah.
But I just want to see that he is around there.
Yeah.
Between top five, top six. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That it's at the moment, or since he joined Aprilia, the factor that he misses the most. Yeah. So
100%. A question I'd like to pose to you about Maverick, actually, and about his sprint win, because it caused quite an interesting debate around, you know, whether a sprint win is kind of a real victory. I just kind of wanted to kind of get your take, because I think the problem is that it's not that it's not a real race. It's the fact that the kind of the parameters of what a real race should be in MotoGP haven't been defined. If you look at superbikes, for example, you know, you look at that sprint race in Barcelona this weekend with Toprak and Bautista. That was a real race, you know, long race, short race. That was a real race. That was a proper race, a proper win. You wouldn't say to Toprak that doesn't count, but you know, in MotoGP, is that sprint win, is that more important for Maverick than a Grand Prix win? It's what's your kind of take on it, because I feel like the debates,
I think the debates tricky. I mean it's super personal opinion, and in my opinion, it just I try to make my life easy. So I would approach that debate from how do you call it, a statistical point of view. If it doesn't count, it doesn't
count.
It's
not a race.
But it just to, because we can speak forever, and we can discuss forever about that.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, then if a sprint race is a proper race, what is a proper race?
Well,
I mean,
exactly.
what would be considered the Sunday's race?
Mm.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I would try to. I'm not really. I don't have. I don't want to be part of debates that you're not gonna have any proper answer or any right or wrong answer. It just if you consider a race, it's good for me. I mean, not you or whoever. It's good for me. But in my opinion, I would prefer to stick into the statistics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Obviously, if any listeners have any very strong opinions one way or the other, you can obviously let us know on, you know, whatever social media platform you want. Not that we'll continue this debate and into many more of these podcasts, but Yuri, thank you very much for your time, as
You're
always.
Welcome.
And thank you to the listeners. As always, you can listen to our podcasts and previous episodes on all your podcast platforms. Obviously keep looking at autosport.com and motorsport.com for all your MotoGP reaction from races and all the latest news and features and podcasts and then new videos and things like that. You've got plenty to keep you entertained for the next 3 weeks between now and the America's Grand Prix. But for autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, you have been listening to the Tank Slappers podcast.